So our goal is to cover a bunch of smaller topics today. We're going to do a little bit more on ovens, a couple more smaller details. We're going to cover countertops, which is very exciting, and hopefully microwaves also. So these are all kind of related. These are all kind of based around the same or similar issues. So we're going to try to cover, run through them. We spoke about the main issue when you're dealing with ovens is generally going to be the issue of day up. There is also a reset issue, but that is really only relevant when you're cooking two things in the oven at the same time. Last time, we had spoken a little bit about it. If you do, for some reason, want to cook milk and fleisch in the same oven at the same time, then you're going to need to deal with both reifa and zeya, and potential be'ein, actual food itself, going back and forth. If you have one of the two types covered in the oven, the covering takes care of both reifa and zeya. It also prevents the physical shield to prevent anything from going back and forth from one to the other. So, I saw in the Art Scroll Laws of Kashrus book, they do actually bring this up, and they say that it is technically mutter to cook milk and meat simultaneously in the same oven at the same time. If one of them is covered, obviously better if you're going to cover both, if that's possible, but if at least one of them is covered, then you're technically okay. Still a dangerous thing to do, not the best idea, but it is technically possible without tripping anything up. So that's just interesting to know. So then we said that if you're cooking at different times, obviously the best thing to do is have two separate ovens. That's the most ideal thing, one meat oven, one dairy oven, you never have any problems. If you don't have that, there is the possibility of getting a two-chambered oven. Apparently this exists, I don't think I've ever seen one, but a two-chambered oven, you can use the chambers separately, designate one for meat, one for milk, and again, you've avoided all your problems. Your next option is to designate, we have Peter Chitos, Rav Schechter, Rav Willig, Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe with the Yashimua, Zilba Momekel, and then the Minchas Yitzchak, the most Machmir. So depending on which chief you're going to hold, it is possible to figure out a way to use one oven for both milk and meat. Minchas Yitzchak said that you basically need to cover everything, so that was typical but not super practical. We said that just besides cooking, the science of cooking, it's often advised or necessary to keep one type of covered. Apparently, if you're not made like cheesecake, you can't really do that if it's going to be open. Certain kinds of chicken, if you want to get like that nice, crunchy, geschmack top, then you need to leave it open in the oven for a certain amount of time. These are just practical cooking things, so assuming you want to be able to leave things open, the Minchas Yitzchak is not going to be a practical option. You're going to need to get yourself either a two-chamber oven or two ovens. But we have three other chitos, which were definitely a little bit more flexible. Rav Schechter says you don't really have a problem with flour, as long as you're using the oven at two separate times, so that reifa is not an issue. The zeya issue is not really a problem, because the zeya goes up to the top of the oven, but never really comes down. Nobody ever talks about the zeya coming back down, in which case you have no problem. The top of your oven, in a phenomenon, you've got to have bulios in both busters and chalav. You're not eating off the top of your oven. Nothing is actually ever touching the top of your oven. You should be careful to make sure that food never actually touches the top of your oven, in which case, you're totally fine. Nothing ever comes back down to trace up the food. So he says as long as you've waited enough for the oven to cool down to avoid the reifa problem, you don't actually have a day issue. You can go back and forth between milk and meat without a problem. That was the most Mikkel Shita. If you're a Schechter guy, then you will hold that way. Rav Willig and Rav Moshe both said that solids don't produce zeya. That's one helpful point. Only liquids are going to produce zeya. You can kind of see that the only time solids are going to be a problem is if you see steam coming from the solid inside the oven with your own eyes. That generally doesn't happen. So the only time you really have to be worried about liquids is the only thing you have to be worried about zeya is with liquids. So the way to deal with it is that solids of both types can be mutter at different times, even uncovered. Covered liquids of both types, or liquidy foods, would be mutter also one after the other at different times. And you would choose one type to be the designated open type. You'd be able to cook those open whenever you want to. For example, if I want to have a meat oven, that means that I can make liquidy wet chicken or brisket or whatever it is whenever I want to without a problem. And the other type would have to be you would never be allowed to cook liquid uncovered unless you kosher your oven in between. That was Rav Willig and Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Mipiyah Shmua from the Rav Yosef Brian, the Rav Ram Greenblatt, said he was a little bit more mingled than he wrote the Igros, so that once you've waited 24 hours, you can even cook in that oven uncovered of the other type. So the way we said it was, within 24 hours of Ben Yomo, he holds like Rav Willig, Eino Ben Yomo, he holds like Rav Shechter. That's a nice way of saying it. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein apparently held this way also, the waiting period of 24 hours. So ask your local Orthodox rabbi, ask your posek, which one you should hold like, and check with your family, see which one they hold like. Some of they hold one of these four shitos, and you should be aware that that's generally the way we're going to go. If you are going to kosher in between, generally we don't like koshering utensils. Yeah.
Now, if you have on you choose that meat, the meat
cheesecake generally is not covered. No, cheesecake is liquid. If it's salad, then yes, okay. If it's salad, then there's no zebra, you can lose it. No. Different time. Not at the same time. Then at the same time, you have something called recha. Recha means aroma. If you have two uncovered foods of different types, and you have them at the same time, recha is looking back and forth. And lechatchila, the old recha and milsa. Recha does matter. Huge machlokas, we referenced a little bit last time. Big machlokas, different gemaras, different figures seem to come out different ways. We said at least lechatchila, recha is milsa, meaning recha does matter, and therefore you would avoid cooking the two types at the same time open. We just said if you cover one of them, then you avoid the recha problem. And depending on what you're cooking, dairy, if it's solid versus liquid, then you could either have a problem or not.
Two solids
at the same time uncovered is a recha problem. Two solids where one of them is covered, you avoid the recha problem, there's no zeh problem because there's no zeh with solids, and you just have to be careful. I guess once you cover one of them, you don't have a bit A issue either, so you solve the problem.
Meaning,
if using
something uncovered, would that be within 24 hours?
Or
like
for a
chef, or were you able to just
want to close
down, or would you
say 24
hours?
For Rav Willig, 24 hours doesn't matter. It was for the motion of the Yeshua, or for looking to see 24 hours is a factor, but for Rav Willig, 24 hours is not a factor. If you want to go back and forth, if you want to use, let's say, a meat oven, if you want to cook uncovered dairy liquid, then you would need to kosher dairy first. Right, so how exactly would you? Well, that was Rav Willig and Rav Moshe and Negros Moshe. There's another sheet of Rav Moshe with Yashmua that was the Rav Yosef Ryan, one of his big comedians, brought down as what Rav Moshe was trying to tell people verbally. It was a little bit more mental. He said 24 hours once you have the time of Eino Ben Yomo, no longer an issue.
And
the
chef says
that
you cook meat to wait to cool down.
Yeah, you have day up, but day only affects the top of the oven. It never comes back down. It's impacts food. So what's the big deal? What's the issue? Right? Because one of the things we see from the Rush, who was the one who came up with this thing in the first place, brought it over from Summa Katara, the Mishnah of Machshirim, was that if the top surface is hot, then the zeh is not actually beating up and becoming liquid. It's not condensing into liquid. It's just burning up as it comes in contact with the surface. So it never condenses to fall back down, which Rav Shechter says so practically, it never comes back into actual food. It's a very strong kind of talk. That's a very strong kind of. Okay, so if you do want to kosher your oven, practically, how do you do that? So if you look at different svarim, you get a bunch of different numbers as to how long you need to leave it on for. I think I saw anywhere from like 20 minutes at the highest temperature to something like an hour to 2 hours at the highest temperature. I would look on my phone, but I know I'm going to lose the recording. Ben Arsh told me that the OU has a standard based on the amount of time, based on the temperature that your oven reaches. It was in Fahrenheit, I think it was, if your oven gets to 550, you put leave it at 550 for an hour. You could also do like 450 for an hour and a half or 2 hours or something. And that would be the way to flip your oven from milk to plastic. Right? In general, is an important point. In general, we don't cash the kalim to go from type A to type B. If you have like a pot, that's like your plastic pot, we don't cash it And like a family and Shabbos to you, and let's say you have a Milton pot, you have a big Shabbos, you have a lot of guests coming over, you need an extra Cholim pot. We generally are not comfortable with kashering from Milton to the Plashix to Plashix to Milton. Just logically, why would that be? Why would you want to avoid doing that?
You
well,
used to it.
Correct, and then therefore what's going to happen?
Oh, wow. And
it's
using it.
Exactly, right? You have your go-to Cholim pot, or your go-to lasagna pan, or whatever it is. Just one time you use it for the other side, you're not going to remember that you switched it. You're after mine. You're going to go, you're going to want to make lasagna, you'll get out the pan that you just used for a delicious yakshit the other day, and for a meat lasagna, or whatever it is, and you just scraped off your food in your pan, and that's terrible. So that's why it makes a lot of sense, very logical. We're not going to switch back and forth between Milton and Plashix. But for the oven, the Rebbeinu explained, since there are so many other dozen lago, even if you just start with Rav Shechter himself, Rav Shechter Shita alone, makes a lot of sense and is already what to rely on. So once we already have those other sneezes, we're comfortable allowing switching back and forth. Because even if you do make a mistake, it's not so clear that you've actually tricked anything up, you've actually created any problems. So we are comfortable switching back and forth, at least for the oven. Now, how exactly would you do it? So again, different shitos, different amounts of time. Somewhere between, I think, Rav Rimon says 20 minutes at the highest temperature. The OU says an hour at 550, 2 hours at 450. Let's just let it go. Self-cleaning ovens are great. You just run a self-cleaning cycle. And that obviously takes care of all your problems. But it's just not super practical. Like a self-cleaning cycle on some ovens can take like 3 hours and like totally destroy everything which is inside the oven. It's pretty cool. You have like some like burnt gunk inside of your oven, you run a cleaning cycle, it literally just becomes ash and you can like sweep it off. It's like cool to see. So that definitely works, but it's not super practical. It takes like 3 hours. It locks your oven, your house stinks for a solid few hours. So not the thing you necessarily want to do, but it technically does work. I have here the Rebbeinu said you should put a bowl of water inside, the bolo kaspolto. It's the way that the taste was absorbed was through seeds from liquid. Then you want to have the same seeds from liquid going on inside the oven also. So that's almost a sort of hagala. What you're really doing when you're doing, we need to talk about kashering in general, but you have a few different types of kashering. There's hagalah, which is kashering in boiling liquid. There's libun, two types of libun, libun kal and libun chamor, which just is a reference to how hot is the temperature of the fire you're dealing with. Generally, hagalah is more of a less intense version of the kashering, and libun is more intense. Everything depends. The big rule when it comes to kashering, we'll talk about more, is kibolo kas koso. The way the taste went in is the way the taste is going to go out. So if I'm dealing with like a pot, which is cooked on a stove with water, the taste usually is absorbed through a liquid medium, and therefore you're going to bring the taste out through hagala, which is boiling water, boiling liquid. If you're dealing with something like a grill or a barbecue, where the taste was absorbed through direct contact with fire, then the only way to get the taste out would be with libun, again, direct contact with fire, like a blowtorch or throwing it in a bonfire or something. So we'll talk about that one more when we deal with kashering, but that's like the Kol HaGedolah, the most important rule you need to know. For kashering, the Bolo Kaspolto, that's relevant here. The way the taste was absorbed into the oven was through steam, so ideally you should have some steam involved in the kashering process. Technically, it may not even be necessary. We say that Libun Kal is equivalent to Hagala. In terms of what you're accomplishing, Libun Kal is equivalent to Hagala. So turning your oven on to such a high temperature for an hour is you're doing Libun Kal, so maybe you don't actually need to steam, but that would be the ideal way to do it, to have a bowl inside to steam up the inside of the oven.
Before
Pesach, we're going to be much more mafia. There's something called Chumra the Chumis, which means that we're a lot more mafia in all these things. So ask your local rabbi what to do about that. We're not talking about Pesach here. We discussed it, but we're not going to talk about it because the rules change and become a lot more complicated. Okay, we also asked about the rack last week. What's the deal with the rack? What are the racks in the special status? The racks should be notice of places, whatever. So it's the same idea. The racks of an oven, and this is actually true for the grate on a stovetop also, are continuously kashering themselves. We spoke about this when we had the question with the yeshiva cholim, like the meham downstairs. Why is it trace? People use it for milk and then they use it for the cholim and splashes and everything's all mixing together. So we have this idea that these kelim can continuously kashen themselves. That's true for the grate on your oven. It's always on the fire, so it's always undergoing libun, and any food that falls is immediately burned up.
Why do you need anything for the oven?
The oven itself?
Yeah.
Why don't we say the same thing? I think that's one of the sneezes.
Or the opposite, if you think of one from the door of the direction,
generally I think it's fine and doable. Sorry. Now I'll have to check. Why do we say that for the oven itself also?
How far does it have to be on the like on the sofa, the patient should still watch it. And you can still watch it for a while. How far does that
right. So if you see that there's food in it, obviously it doesn't work. Generally it should burn pretty quickly. Particles of food is going to burn more quickly than I guess a liquid will, and liquid is more likely just going to dry up. If it's literally sitting on the plane, then it's undergoing rebound as you kind of continue cooking, so you usually will be okay. You see like a piece of cheese next to the fire, obviously that's going to be a problem. Generally good practice is if anything falls out of your pot and lands on like that kind of in-between space on the oven, then that should be considered as trays and thrown out. The reason you can put pots of both types on the grate itself, on the racks themselves, is because we assume that those things themselves are continuously being kosher. Even still, it is good practice to say that the left side of my stove is going to be the milk one, the milk grate, the right side of my stove is going to be the plastic one, because of this like dropping issue, that if a couple of things fall out, if you're consistent with this, then you'd actually be able to assume that they're still kosher. If you do switch back and forth, then you'd have to assume that food of both types has fallen in those spots, and therefore that those spots are trays, and you have to throw out anything. So good practice would be to designate the separate signs of your stovetop as milkless and placer, but it's not necessary just if you switch back and forth. If you're not careful about it, then treat any food that falls as trays and toss it. That's important to know.
Do you think we can spend enough time to kosher
the
stovetop? Is it just like
1 foot
second once it burns?
Yeah, as continuously kosher yourself. You don't need to leave it on just so it's a kosher afterwards. As it's being used, it's also kosher yourself at the same time. So you can just...
Can you cook to, like, dairy and gluten-free
dinner as well? Dairy and gluten-free is discussed. The issue that we're concerned about, though, is just the aim, just the physical particles going from, splashing from one to the other. That's definitely a problem when you're dealing with frying, oil just splashes like that. But the reason we're not concerned about Recha or Zeya is because anytime the pots are open to the element, they're not in an enclosed area, we assume that any Recha and any Zeya can dissipate into the atmosphere. And you wouldn't, that's not going to be a problem there. But you do still have a problem with the physical things bouncing back and forth. You should avoid it. If you are cooking them together, you should keep your eyes on the pots, you should be aware of what's going on. You don't need to assume that things that drift one from one to the other, but obviously if you do see, then it's going to be more of an issue. Then, if you do see something jump from one to the other, then you need to start doing some geometry, whatever it is you're talking about, trick, figure out, you need to figure out how much went from pot A to pot B, and is there 60 times that value in the pot itself? If it is, then you have visual and you'd be okay. If it hits the pot itself, different problem. This gets complicated, but it depends on where on the pot it lands. If it's connected also, say a pot which is like half full. So it actually depends if the drop of, let's say, chicken soup falls on your... Mac and cheese pot. So if it landed on the bottom half where the food is, then your food is going to be okay. The taste goes through and it's bustled to shoot you. If it lands on the top half, though, if it lands on the top half, then we assume it does not go directly through and mix with the food, so you actually don't have the opportunity for bissel. So that is
what
we're
doing. So what's the status of the mac and cheese?
If it lands on the top half, then I think you need to let it cool down before letting it interact with the top part of the pot. You should, I mean, it's more of an issue for soup, which like you're going to pour out of the pot. So in that case, you have to, I think, you have to let the soup cool down until it's less than you have to let it go, and then pour it out of the pot, or pour it out of the pot on the opposite side of where the, let's say, the chicken soup landed. That's just really Colorado right there. You don't want to have to
deal
with it. Yeah, it's generally it's going to be open to the environment. The design is not going to be...
Oh, you're saying it's a wall.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know.
It's a wall, side of the wall,
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. If it lands connected to the ofo, though, then you're generally going to be... Because the food itself is going to be in the vasel, but I think you just complete a kosher in the pot, because the taste is still absorbed into the pot itself. So it doesn't mess up the food. That definitely gets complicated. I don't want to get into that because it's so complicated. If that happens, you call a rabbi, and you should be aware. You should tell the rabbi, where did the food land? Is it on the top half of the pot? Or like, was it connected to the ofel? Or shall it connect to the ofel? That would be one of the important factors that he's going to want to know. Okay. That's an important point. You don't have to beat erratic and assume that food is just like waiting for you to turn your back and then jumping from pot A to pot B. That's certainly not how it works. You do need to be aware. You do need to keep your eyes open. And if you do see something happen, then you should calculate Chishim or call a rabbi and talk about it. Generally, if you're dealing with stuff which is like popping or splashing, don't cook them. Don't cook two types at the same time because you're going to have problems. Generally better to avoid. Okay, we spoke about ovens, so the rat. So number one, we said that they're continuously kashering themselves. Even if they weren't, we have a call, which we're going to talk about in a second, for countertops. We've mentioned a bunch of times before in the past also, we assume that taste cannot get absorbed from cleat to cleat without rotating. That in order for taste to go to from one place to another, from one cleat to another, you need heat and you need a liquid medium. Because it's two ingredients. So if you have your oven rack, assuming you're not spilling all the time in this rack, then putting a pot on the oven rack, you have two things going for you. Number one, you have the fact that that really nigrad in taste cannot transfer. And number two, even if taste could transfer, we assume that it's continuously being kashered inside the oven. So those are two things. The Moshe Feinstein says you have two things going for you, and that's why you don't need separate racks in your oven for milk and meat, because of these two issues. If you do spill on the rack, then you do need to be aware, because if there's the ain there, you can literally see chunks of chicken soup or whatever it is on the rack, and obviously you do have a problem. You should always try to keep your oven clean. Even when you're kashering from type A to type B, you should try to clean out your oven beforehand. Technically, what the leaven should do, leaving it at such a high temperature for so long, what it technically should do is it should burn out any grain. But still, it's a good idea to clean as much as you can out. If you have like grease stains or oil stains, you should clean it with like one of those caustic oven cleaners, which makes it a royal achila anymore. Poisonous, basically. So clean it well, do a good job, and then whatever's left there is no longer royal achila, and therefore it's not going to mess up any food down the line. So that's definitely a better move. You should be aware of pain. But technically, we have those two things. We have the leaven, continuous leaven, and we have cleat to cleat without road depth, so there's no transfer. The problem is when you get to countertops. Because what's the problem with countertops? What do you lose? You lose the constant leaven. So remember, Moshe doesn't talk about this explicitly, but when you're reading the Tshuva, it sounds like he's actually okay with the cleat to cleat the leaven rosev alone, and he adds in the leaven, the continuous leaven is like an extra factor. So according to that, if he's really comfortable with the cleat to cleat below rosev, relying on that alone, then you don't need to be worried about countertops at all. You can put your pots down, your hot pots down, with abandon without caring, left side, right side, milk side, meat side, doesn't really matter. Problem is, there's an explicit Ramah where he says exactly it's the same stuff that we've been dealing with for the oven stuff, the Isaiah stuff. He says, Yesh lahachmer v'kol zeh, and it really sounds like he's talking about this issue. It really sounds like he's including two hot pots touching each other, or basically the cleat to cleat below rosev, the possibility for a surface to absorb paste even without rosev. It really sounds like the Ramah is saying, Yesh lahachmer, that this is something you should be careful about. So everybody asks the question on the Moshe, how are you so cavalier about saying that it's okay to rely on this, if the Ramah is so clear, it seems to be so clear that this is a thing. So most, generally, we try to be machmir for the Ramah. Technically or practically, what does that mean? So a few different ways to deal with it. Best thing to do would be to have separate sections of your countertops to deal with, well, let's say, left side dairy, right side meat, have that designated, put a sticker up so you remember whatever you need to do. It's okay for it to be like one long slab of metal. Like this table is one long chunk of wood. It's not a problem. We don't assume that the tape is going to go from like left side all the way to the right side and then create problems. Why not? Because the countertop itself is cold. So tape is not able to actually like travel through a cold surface. It stops basically after today cleva. It stops after a pretty small amount of space. But you're never going to know exactly where like what was the circle area. Then I put this pot down and avoid that one little circle, obviously. So if you just like draw an imaginary line, or you have a little divider at some point over your countertop, even if it is one long slab, you designate left side is going to be milk and the right side is going to be meat. Keep it separate, and that's the best thing to do to be the kindest homer of your mom. If until this point you haven't been so careful, you've just been putting your pots down left and right without thinking about it, without caring, and now you want to start being careful, the first thing you'd have to do is you'd have to kosher the countertops. The process is your countertops to you have, actually, your countertops have definitely absorbed both types, because spillage happens all the time. Pull out your chicken soup, a little bit spills over the edge. You pull out your mac and cheese, a little bit spills over the edge. You definitely do have actual liquid tape absorbed into the countertops of both types. So even though it's not technically getting absorbed into the pot, because cleave of the lirota is maker, then okay, if you want to now be careful, you need to kosher the countertops first, and then you should split it up left side and right side. So how would you kosher that? We'll talk about that by koshering, but that would be pouring boiling hot water over the countertops, pouring boiling hot water over the countertops should be the way to go in order to be kosher. Yeah.
Would you then buy a house in Kosher,
then what's
not
helpful?
Yeah,
if it's not kosherable, you probably have to cover it or replace it. Just rough times. Yeah.
And
I think
something straight.
Oh, great point. Straight does change the game. It does change the rules of the game. Whenever you're dealing with koshering heter, meaning you're koshering milchik and you want to make the deflation, or vice versa, if you're dealing with koshering heter, then the rules are a lot more megal. We actually say that generally, I think we constantly that you can always get away with hagala or a libun kow when you're dealing with heter. And terebola is always okay. When you're dealing with trait, we're much more specific about the bola kachpolto, and that may make things more difficult. So if you're dealing with trait, you just call a rabbi. If you're just going from A to B or B to A, then I think you should be okay with the boiling hot water. You don't know for sure that any one space, any individual space is trait. You have to assume that way. You don't know that there's actually a mixture of milk and meat in a specific area. So there I think we're able to still rely on Hagala. And I'm not positive about that.
Meaning
leave it on for a time. You have to clean it very well and leave it on for a significant amount of time. You can get the match.
They don't know what
we use for meter dairy. A few minutes may not be okay. A few minutes may not be long enough. Let's say I think the smallest amount of time we say for an oven is 20 minutes. And then the oven is 15 minutes at the highest temperature.
Soap top, I guess a little bit less.
Even for a soap top, for a Jewish soap top, you don't really need to wait at all. It was kosher itself as they were cooking whatever they were cooking, and then by the end, by the time they finished, it was fine. If you see the aim, if you drop anything, then you should treat that as straight, clean it off, and don't eat it. But to use the thing itself, you shouldn't eat kosher.
Is there any difference between stove top and, we have like a but in the restaurant, we have like an electrical one, or
different types.
On one surface,
these are important questions. There are different things you have to deal with. In Gruz, we don't have like physical stovetop ranges. What people do is they get like those, I don't know what they call them, burners. Kiran, you know they are. They're like, a little knob, like a flat electric thing, heats up. It's really cool. So that's what we use for our thing. So those apparently get hot enough to basically accomplish the same thing, and they'd be, whatever falls on them are going to be burned up, and accomplish the same thing as the fiery grits. So that should be the same thing. They have something called induction stovetops, which are really cool. They basically look like magic. The only thing that gets hot is the pot itself. I don't know how it works, magic science, whatever it is, but like you could theoretically touch the surface of the oven, and while like a pot is boiling, like boiling water, then you won't burn your finger. Because like it only directs the heat specifically to the pot bottom, there's no reaction between the bottom of the pot and like the surface of the thing. It's magic, I don't know how it works. So it's really cool, but in terms of like koshering your stovetop, it's really bad. It's because you have no heat going on, the heat's only interacting with the bottom of the pot.
So that would be
a lot more difficult.
But when you're making it out of the air, because then it's not just a just cold chemical.
No.
Is it hot?
No, anything which spills out of the pot is going to be boiling hot liquid falling onto the surface and is going to get absorbed directly there. So then, and that's the place where most spills is going to be happening. So that's much more of a problem. There, I think you just have to assume everything that you should designate separate ones. And if you don't designate, I think you have to assume everything straight, that everything that falls is straight. You don't have the luxury of actually assuming things are gushing itself as it goes on. So that's a lot more difficult. There you should be more knocking on designating left side, right side. That would be the best thing to do. But it is still really cool. My grandparents just got one recently, and it's literally magic. It's like a crazy thing. Okay, so we spoke about the oven, we spoke about the racks, we even include two, we spoke about countertops. So let's say you don't have enough counter space. I was talking to one of the Brits who's visiting. He tells me about his flat in the university, and just practically they have like one small chunk of counter, and like it fits three pots. You can't really divide it and say left side for this, right side for that. It doesn't work practically. So what are they supposed to do? So Rebetter said you kind of have two options. Basically, ideally, if you're going to be behind this remote, which we're definitely going to try to do, you should have some sort of a cover, something in between the hot pot and the countertop itself. Either you could use trivets, right? Just buy them. We have like two. We need more. But really, you should have like 15 trivets and just be able to put down a trivet for every hot pot that you're going to put down. And having that thing in between means the tom is definitely not going to get from pot through the trivet then into the countertop. That's just not going to happen practically. So that solves your problem. And the trivet does need to be meat trivet, dairy trivet. You should have your meat trivets and dairy trivets separate. And then that's one way of solving the problem. The other way of solving the problem is you can just have the same board. Okay. When we spoke about washing dishes, we said that if you really want to be the kind of chumrah of the mechatzitzah, you should have those bases, those bins to put in the thing, but you should also have a board to go to the bottom of the sink, wood or plastic board, to go to the bottom of the sink to make sure that the bin itself doesn't touch the bottom of the sink. Now that's a little bit more of like a super chumrah, like that's not really necessary, and nobody thinks that's necessary, but if you want to be extra masculine, then you can use that. So you can use a similar type of board to put on top of your counter space, and you should be able to flip that off for milk and meat. You can have your red one for the meat stuff, for the meat pot, and your blue one for the dairy pot, if you're in Mora Shakowell, your blue ones for the meat pot, and the red ones for the yellow ones for
the
That I don't think you should do because it does go like it is space, like it does absorb through, I think. And that's not a good thing because it's gonna get to the other side and just simple.
And how hot is it? Like say you have a coffee mug and when you're holding the bottom you feel the heat for the boil of the rhythm.
That is fine. The point of hot pots which are boiling hot coming off the oven, coming off the fire coming out of the oven. Those should not be put down directly. Even though there's no roast that we do so that the heat at least the chasiva, the remote the chasiva, is that the heat is going to cause taste to transfer, at least potentially transfer. That's why you need to be not to adopt the roast.
You need one of those cheaper cups, where it's put on hot coffee, chocolate inside, kind of like that small experiment at the bottom. Like by the very bottom, it's not
a... Yeah, that's the contact point. And the point of contact with the surface, if it's boiling hot, then you shouldn't put it down. If it's holdable, then you're okay.
What happens if you trivet, like, have some soup on them, and, like, things have spilled on them, and then you take both kinds, or whatever, or if you have the chicken soup on one, you can mix it on the trivet pot and put it on the trivet.
There's still chicken soup on the trivet, or you...
Yeah, I mean, whatever, yesterday you make chicken soup, and then it boils over, and when you took it off the stove, the trivet just absorbs some of the...
You made a mistake. You used the same trivet for both types, which you're not supposed to do, but you made a mistake. If the chicken soup is no longer liquidy, then you still clean below roasting. Right? So it's only going to be a problem if it's liquidy. Then if it is liquidy, if it's still chickeny chicken soup, then you definitely have a problem. If it's dried up, it's no longer liquid, then yeah, you're still technically okay. It definitely should be avoided. wash off the pot, because the salad is going to leave a little bit of shuman on the pot, but I think technically it should be okay. Okay, so we spoke about all those things. Fantastic. Trivet support. Okay, one more thing, which I think Ethan asked about also last week, is when it comes to hosting. We've covered a few different times where we have like different chitos between Ashkenaz and Sephardim. We just said we had four different chitos for using the oven. So what happens if, let's say, like a Rav Willig Jew goes to spend Shabbos with their Sheftig Jew? So generally, this Rav Willig guy is masmir not to use. He has a plastic oven and he never uses it for uncovered milchik. And he knows, the other way around, he has a milchik oven that he never uses for uncovered plastic. And he knows that the Rav Shechter Jew is much more open, much more lenient. He goes back and forth with the drop of the hat. As long as it's cooled down, and obviously he's following halacha. But it's Rav Shechter halacha. Is the Rav Willig Jew able to eat at the house of a Rav Shechter Jew? Is a Ashkenazi able to go for Shabbos to Timani, who's going to give him hot soup that he just took out of the refrigerator that morning? The Timani, well, like the Rambam laughs that a Bishalach, Hilu, the double glass, is that going to be a problem? We spoke about glassware is going to be, we'll talk about that, I think, one of the coming weeks, is going to be a big discussion, but end of the day, Ashkenazim and Sephardim are much more makeable when it comes to using glass for both types. So what if Ashkenazi goes to the Sephardi and he serves him a beautiful, beautiful plate of, let's say, brisket on his nice pizza glass plate, and he knows in the past that he needs some pizza? All these different questions kind of revolve around the same idea. What are we supposed to do if we have these different machlokesim? Can somebody hold him a more machmir shita relying on somebody who uses a more mako shita? So I asked Benish about this today. It's kind of a regular achas. He didn't really go into detail, but he wanted to say that for Shabbat, he thought that for our Temani, our Ashkenazi Temani question, he thought that it would be totally fine. He didn't explain why Shabbos would be a little bit of a different discussion, but he thought that Shabbos here would be okay. When it came to Kashrus, when it came to these types of questions for Kashrus, he felt that the host should try to be accommodating to the guest level of Chumrah. So in our example of the Rav Shechter and the Rav Willig situation, I guess the Rav Shechter guy should technically, let's say, kosher his oven before cooking, before starting to cook for Shabbos. That would be the best thing for the host to do. But the guest does not need to interrogate the host and ask him, hey, when was the last time you cooked dairy in your oven? When was the last time you had meat in the oven? What's the deal? And try to figure out exactly if, according to his own personal standards, or his own personal stock, would it be okay for him to eat the food? He said that that's not necessary for the guest to do, but really, more because of the hires, maybe the host should try to accommodate the stock of the guest, which is a nice thing to do. I asked about that. There's something called mommy meals, where it's just like a nice thing, community, where if a mother gives birth, everything just becomes incredibly difficult, just like normal life becomes very hard for a solid 2-3 weeks. You're not sleeping at all, and everything is totally new, and you're in the hospital for the first couple of days, everything's crazy. So often what people do, we have to set up in Chris, we have to set up in Washington Heights, the very nice thing, that different families will sign up to provide meals for the first couple of weeks. Just makes things much, much easier, much just like simpler and calmer to deal with. They don't have to deal with cooking meals and running out to buy groceries and all that stuff. Things are just kind of taken care of for you. So in that type of situation where the host or the person cooking is not going to be eating the food, he's just sending it to the other person, I ask if the cook there needs to be more, the cook should be matched to the standards of the recipients, or is it the same thing, the cook can just kind of follow his own stock, and then the recipients can enjoy it without wondering about how it was cooked. So Rabbeinu said there's a little bit more room, or a little bit more reason for the cook, for the person cooking, to be matched on the standards of the recipients. But even there, if the recipient doesn't necessarily know that the cook was matched that way, or it's just not doable for the cook, then it's still okay for the recipients to rely on the lower standards, or the lower, in quote, standards of the cook, as long as there is a shita that they're relying on, as long as an actual psak that they're relying on, then technically you're going to be okay. Alright, so a little bit of a chilek between Shabbos and Kashrus. Shabbos, since we've been here, since we say so many times, we explain why. Kashrus, there is like a little bit more of a meyach or idea than the chashim and the yevet. The chashim has nothing to do with kind of be mocked to the standards of the guests. But, end of the day, it would be okay. I did see, I think committed dini halacha, when it came to something like glass plate, where the guest sees in front of his own eyes that he's being brought a plate, which he knows, let's say the Sephardi host switches back and forth, it's not makanan. So there, I think it was in dini halacha, it may have been different things, but I think dini halacha said that there the guest should try to request a different plate, maybe a disposable plate or whatever it is, because if it's sitting in front of him and he knows, I guess, the moeno, that he's doing something which he personally holds to be usher, then you should not be makel that way. But in terms of like all the cooking, you don't need to interrogate the guy, especially if it's going to make the host feel bad. You don't need to interrogate him about his cooking methods. It would be okay to kind of just assume or rely on his standards. But if you see it in front of you, if it's a glass plate you know is used for dairy, then you should definitely try to avoid doing that. There are better sets. I don't think that's necessary. I thought it would be better. Maybe we'll ask your local post. Yeah.
What do you think about other just general cautions? Not only just, you know, I don't know, lettuce and green leaves and washing and things like that. You know what they buy, what they buy, and everything.
You have to know who you're being hosted by. This is a huge issue for like Rabbanim in generally like smaller communities, but even in like larger communities. They need to decide pretty early on, basically from the start of their career, if they're comfortable eating out of people's houses or not. Because definitely in the beginning, you don't know different people's standards, and it can be incredibly insulting to be able to say, like, I'm only going to X these five families, but I'm not going to go to these, like, 20 families. So what are you going to do? Are you comfortable having a conversation with people saying, would you mind just talking out your standards of kashrus? What do you buy? What do you not buy? If you're able to have that relationship, then great. You can eat it wherever you want, and you can talk out what the standards are. But very often, we're not comfortable having those conversations, definitely not at the beginning, and they basically have to decide that I'm not going to eat out for the first 5-10 years of my rabbanus until I get to know the community that I'm going to get to know, like what shayach, what's not shayach. So for generally, like you do need to know who you're eating out of. As long as you're comfortable, you're confident that they hold a shita, that there's an actual shita that they're holding of, that you know is a real legitimate shita, then you should be okay. Like you said, you are able to rely on those shitas. It is their affair for the host to try to be more mocked if that's who the guest is, but end of the day, the guest is able to rely on general Gatsby Jews. People in general eat Echadam and Bisur, and people do have a Cheskos Kashas unless you know specifically that they specifically don't care about something. If people have told you that, like, yeah, bugs aren't a thing, and like bugs don't exist, and there are no bugs in lettuce, then you probably shouldn't be eating their salad. But if you haven't heard that explicitly from them, like in general they're God-fearing, they care about kashrus, then you don't need to like check their pantry and check the hashay room. You can rely that they're, you can assume that they're getting good things.
You should worry about
I would want to say probably, but I'm not sure why I want to say that. So you'd have to, you'd have to ask somebody. Okay, good. Any last questions? All right. Like we try to say for each year, these are complicated things. It's very important to know the background, to know the chitos, to know what's going on. But when these types of questions do come up, have somebody that you're comfortable calling, texting, getting in touch with, and checking with just to make sure. But now you know the chitos, you know what's what. So you can ask a question well, and you know what is a question, what's not a question. Just go ahead.